If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine light and love of the Supreme Divine Presence. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. And that would be you and me and everyone. So, tonight's seminar topic is Soul's Journey Through Religions, Ideologies, Belief Systems, and Beyond. So if you're ready to look at all that and go beyond, let's just start with an attunement, okay? Let's take a deep breath and ride that energy right down all the way through your body. Asking for the cleansing and clearing of anything you don't have to carry forward from this moment. Anything you've brought to this moment that is less than supremely joyful and peaceful, let it go. And let it go with the next breath, okay? Deep breath. And with your next breath, just call forward your highest divine nature and let it occupy the total biosphere that is your consciousness radiation in time and space. Deep breath. Ah, that feels so good. So we're looking at soul's journey through religions, ideologies, belief systems, and beyond. And, well, it's almost like a little song. We are here where we are because we are because we are. We are here where we are because we are. And we are where we are because that is where we need to be to learn. Learn what? Whatever it is that you purposed to inquire into, complete, fulfill, and transcend, that is where you are. And that is why you are where you are. So I want to look at souls here. What in the world is a soul? A soul is consciousness itself. It is aware light. It is who you are. You don't have a soul. You are a soul. You have a body. You have an astral, emotional body. You have a mental body. You have an energetic body. Those are like suits of clothes you put on to operate in certain rooms of consciousness. But you are the consciousness that occupies all of that. And being able to consciously occupy as soul these various levels and dimensions is why you're here, to learn that. And we'll progress on and you'll see why. So there's five types of souls in incarnation. The Lemurian, which is probably what we would call true Earth humanity. We have the Atlantean that came in during Atlantis. And then we have the Moonchain, the souls that came from the previous evolutionary round before Earth. We have then souls that came in from other planets. And we have rare and advanced souls. some of whom are awaiting incarnation at this time. What are they waiting for? I would say probably the emergence of Prema Sai Baba, because some of these great souls don't need to be here during the time of purification and the cleanup. They're here to embody in the Golden Age and to carry that forward for the next 2,500 years or so. Maybe longer. Who knows? But what I'm saying is that there are groups of souls that come in waves, let's say, to learn as a collective group of souls particular lessons. The Atlantean souls are very familiar in the light work, because you see a lot of people who are very into the psychic, into the occult, into things like channeling and power tools and all of the various occult arts that exhibit psychic prowess and power. That's very, very Atlantean. And then the Lemurian is kind of a slumbering consciousness that many, many people are still in which they've not truly embodied in their bodies yet. They're still kind of hanging out, and they're not fully integrated, which would be the average masses of humanity that are as yet unawakened. The moon chain, which is the previous evolution of worlds, a chain being seven globes that alternate the wave of life as it moves through the different evolutionary stages. We're, for example, on Earth, we're in the middle of the fourth round on this planet. So we're still in the midway point of the evolution in terms of the planets and how they evolved within their own systems. The moon chain people, the last of which who came upon this earth was the Lord Buddha. So he would be called the fruit of that previous cycle of evolution. The Christ, the Lord Maitreya, is the firstborn fruit of this earth. And it will be the Lord Maitreya, known by many, many other names and different religious points of view, who will be the head of the brother and sisterhoods of light and sort of the overseeing director of the Golden Age. The avatars come in off-planet to embody God in the fullest degree possible at that time. And we're going to have Prema Sai Baba, which will be the next embodiment of Satya Sai Baba, who will be the Purna avatar, the full avatar for this next cycle. Then you have souls like myself who've come in originally from another planet, in my case Venus. I was born here. But before I came here, I was on Venus. And then you have souls like Omnic Onik, who actually are wearing their astral body densified into the physical plane, but living on Earth. Omnic Onik is not a walk-in. She's not a future self overlay like me. She is who she is, densified into visibility in the physical plane. Very, very interesting. And there are many, many other souls who feel like this is not their home planet, that have a greater affinity with another planet. Omnic Onik's uncle, Odin, who was called Orthon in the book in the books by George Adamski to veil his true identity. Anyway, his real name is Odin, and he's the uncle of Omnic Onik, who's been living on Earth. But he's a galactic historian, and he said that all of the people on Earth have extraterrestrial origins and basically came onto the planet in colonizations from Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn primarily, or Mercury when, or let's say Mercury, then came too close to the Sun, and the souls had to embody upon Saturn. So those are basically where most people on Earth were seeded from, with, of course, you know, the Pleiadians and others who came at other times and in between. But just saying, those are the major five areas that souls have come to from Earth, you know, looking at Earth in a very broad generalization here. So souls are here to develop and master their human personality as an instrument. They're here to master their physical, emotional, and mental bodies. Each one of those levels, when they're mastered, represents a level of initiation that souls undergo. And that's what everybody on the planet is involved with in some degree. So the soul, you, the spiritual entity occupying your body-mind instrument, is to be successful, is meant to be successful in moving and acting and manifesting in the three worlds of human endeavor, which would be to say the physical world, the astral world, the mental world, as well as the soul plane itself, so that you're functioning as a soul, both consciously, physically here, as well as very consciously upon the soul plane itself. So the purpose of life is not to be free of the three worlds of human endeavor, to escape, so to speak, into the kingdom of God, but rather to embody the life of the liberated soul here on earth and within the fields of human endeavor. And this is a point seldom emphasized. The soul has its own task to do, which is often the very reverse of what the personal egoic self is familiar with. I really like Sai Baba's definition here. He says that the soul lives by giving and forgiving, the ego by getting and forgetting. So that's a good thing to bear in mind. Now, the results of soul contact is actually responsible for a lot of the turmoil that we see on the planet today. Because we are learning, as a soul, how to be at home here and now, wherever we happen to be, functioning in the world of human living while serving the divine plan. And that is the main shift that takes place with full spiritual integration. And so everyone on the planet is receiving a surcharging of tremendous soulific energy that's pouring forth now from what is called the heart of God, which is another term for the spiritual brother and sisterhood that oversees the evolution of humanity, the hierarchy as it's called. And from the center where the will of God is known, which is the throne of God for all intents and purposes, that is also known as Shambhala, where the will of God is touching down to humanity for the very first time directly. And that's because there are so many third-degree initiates who have contact with Shambhala because they are at that level fully soul integrated. So because there are so many in that grouping, you have a direct now conduit from the center where the will of God is known, or Shambhala, down to humanity directly. Now, that's all well and good if a place has been created for the absorption and integration of that energy. But where there's no place for its integration, it results in a lot of things we see now playing out in the news. For example, it will go wherever there's an opening, because as you know, spiritual energy is like rain. It falls upon the just and the unjust, the prepared and the unprepared. So the first thing that it produces is a conflict, turmoil, opposing loyalties, an inner battle between the ego and the soul. You know, who's going to get the turf here? The turf being your physical life, your body. And so there's a collision of divergent energies and viewpoints. And you see that everywhere you look in the world today. But bear in mind, every single nation also, in the collectivity, is the soul. The highest quality of the nature of that nation would be the soul, and that's represented always by the initiates in that land. And then you have the egoic personality nature, represented by the masses, who are largely unconscious. So even within that, you'll have a disparity within nations between those who are responsive and able to receive the higher energies and commutate them down peacefully and harmoniously, and those who are fragmented, in a sense, you know, kind of psychically dispersed by the energies, and they're thrown into great conflict and confusion, and sometimes act out desperately from the karma that is stored in the subconscious. That's where somebody just goes berserk for no known reason. Something has triggered that karma in the subconscious, and they act out in seemingly unconscious and uncontrolled ways. And they are indeed unconscious and uncontrolled. The next thing that happens is a sensitivity to ideas. Now, while this produces a certain flexibility of response and a certain seeming open-mindedness, it begins to fluctuate and waver almost to the point of instability, producing a constant changing of viewpoint. So you see people changing from this and that, one day this, one day that, and there's no consistency. But this eventually leads to a sensitivity of the spiritual type, which would be the intuition. And as the intuition, which is like the voice of God within you, the guidance, the inner master, eventually will enable an individual to distinguish promptly between that which is the real and that which is the illusion. And that is happening with very advanced people. Sometimes they call it their truth monitor. It goes off very clearly when things are aligned and goes, nah, when they're not. And then in more advanced people, you have a process of detachment. Many of us are going through that. And this is a difficult and painful process of beginning to discern the momentums of the soul and the egoic personality. And to put it simply, to begin to choose the highest possible choice and alternative of any given situation. Go for the highest and the best that you could possibly bring forward. So this produces at first a kind of a violent separation and an outward appearance of divided interest, where you see this in families and relationships between generations and people and different things. It's like, no, I'm a vegetarian. You know, I'm not going to eat your meat. Or no, I just eat meat. I'm not going to eat your vegetables. I mean, that's a very simplistic example. But just to give you the sense that it begins to really divide people who are choosing into a higher way of living and people who are very content and even obstinate in maintaining the way things have always been, or hoping to maintain the way things have always been. Good luck. Good luck on that one. So gradually there's a, a submergence of personality momentums and interests to being of genuine service, you know, where you're just seeking to be truly useful. As the Course in Miracles said, I am here only to be truly helpful. You want to be truly helpful without interfering in the freedom of choice that every soul must have. We can be helpful, but we're not supposed to interfere or get in a person's way. So eventually, this process of detachment enables a person to come into complete harmonic resonance with the soul and to begin to see the difference between the egoic desire of a personal nature, which is invariably selfish, and the unconditional openness of a soul that is just here to love and serve. Now, this produces also this integration, or the reception of soul energy, also heightens creativity, because the third aspect of the soul is intelligent activity. You have divine will, you have love wisdom, and you have creative intelligence, the three aspects of the soul. And the period of creativity is heightened by that third aspect of the soul, which is the creative aspect. And this development will produce definite changes in your habits, in your physical plane life. And it will lead to a sort of consecration in how you approach your artistic talents, whatever they are. You'll find yourself evoking a higher quality of soulific energy as you write, as you compose, as you paint, as you write. You will be drawing upon the soul energy instead of just the ego, with the astral and the mental involvement. You'll begin to bring forward that pure, divine, I love the definition that the great dancer Isadora Duncan gave. She said, pure art is the expression of the radiant soul. And that's it. Pure art is the expression of the radiant soul. And the artists are invariably the prophets of the future. Invariably, it's the artistic person who catches the vision, whether they make films or they're writing books or however and musicians. Musicians almost invariably catch the keynote, the soul notes of the incoming energy. Like, for example, Elvis Presley. You might laugh there. The Beatles. Before them, Simon and Garfunkel. The Mamas and the Papas. Fleetwood Macs. I mean, Moody Blues. I mean, go and go and go and go. The musicians always carried the keynote of what was going to emerge into the collective consciousness as next. So this is a great time for being a creative artist, because if you're at all spiritually attuned, which you sure would be or you wouldn't be listening to me, wow, it's time to open that creative flow and allow it to express in completely new ways. Oh, and also colors. Do you realize that 100 or so, maybe 200 years ago, people could only see tones of brown and gray, and the clothing and the cars and everything reflected that? I mean, look at the colors that are on the planet today. I remember back in the 60s when we wanted to find purple shirts for men, it was impossible. I wanted a purple carpet for my home. I had to special order it. And now with the incoming seventh ray, one of the major rays of the Aquarian age, we have purple everywhere. But just saying, with the shift of consciousness comes the ability to see new colors, be able to have new visions, be able to hear new tonalities of the cosmic music, be able to be sensitive to worlds that before you could not even dream existed. Worlds that don't fit into linear concepts at all. They defy all of the rigidity we have placed around our experience with time and space and causation and event horizons and all of that. How does that work within a quantum field of unlimited potentiality? Hello, it doesn't. The potentialities come forward to meet you at your preparedness, at your openness, at your place where you have given wiggle room to something supremely mysterious and unknown. Supremely unknown. And therefore, delightful if you're at all adventuresome in your spirit. And you are, you probably wouldn't be listening to BBS radio. That's our specialty, doing this sort of stuff. So we are here as a soul, as a collective, because there's just one big collective that we call soul. And we are to learn how to be at home, here and now, wherever we happen to be, functioning in the world of human living, and unconditionally serving with a sense of brotherhood and kinship with all life. Many of you that listen are very, very attuned to speaking to other than human beings. You're able to commune, as I do, with birds and plants and animals and trees. I've received some of my most wonderful teachings from trees. They will tell you how to be grounded and rooted and to give glory to God and be open to God at all times. That's what their branches are telling you. That's what their sturdy trunks are telling you and their deep roots. They have so much to say about selflessly giving of themselves without any bias or prejudice. Anyone can eat of their fruit. Anyone can enjoy their shade. Anyone can hug them and feel a regeneration of energy. That's the gift of the tree. It's interesting in the Bible that we're also referred to as trees of righteousness. Trees of righteousness, I like that. But you catch the drift. You learn to read the heart and the divine spirit inherent in all life. There's nothing that's insentient, unconscious at all. Even a rock will tell you about God. Everything is conscious of God, but man. But then we have been given the task of multidimensional expansion of awareness. So it's a little more complex with us. Now, bear in mind, everything in existence either has been a human being in the past, will become a human being in the future, is presently a human being, or is taking their first baby steps into being a human being. How does that work? Well, sometimes a soul from another planet or another, let's say, kingdom in nature, let's say an animal or maybe a devic elemental spirit of earth, wind, fire, or water, or ether, maybe they want to try what it's like to be in a human body. But they're not very good at it. They don't quite know how to get their trip together, so they come out as deformed. Or sometimes they will back out. And they will be stillborn. They'll get cold feet and they'll say, well, I don't think so. I'm out of here. Or they'll be born into a family and then suddenly, you know, they pass away. Why? For whatever reason, the soul either had a completion in just tiptoeing in for that momentary experience, or they got cold feet and backed out. But a soul's got to do what a soul's got to do. And that accounts for many times when you have that kind of experience. It's always agreed upon at a soul level between the parents or the mother and that entity. Always. No one is ever a victim. Everything happens according to very specific and very just and very beautiful divine cosmic laws. That sure doesn't feel very comforting, however, when you lose a child that way. But I'm just saying, there's always a deeper meaning and purpose behind that. And very, very often that same soul will come through again at another time. Maybe they just tried the water that time. They stuck their toe in. Maybe they just had a few breaths of air and they left. Maybe the next time they'll have a little bit more courage to hang in there and to stay longer. So just saying. So the shift that we're going through right now takes place with full spiritual integration, where one shifts from living for one's own fulfillment and personal gratification to living purely as a divine functionary, a spiritual vessel and conduit through which God may have full occupancy and expression. And such is the life of a genuine master. One, in essence, dies to the limited personal self, which is so full of desires for personal achievement and satisfaction and acquiring this and that. But all of that falls away quite naturally with full spiritual realization. It's just like you were really fascinated with toys when you were a child, but it was very easy for you to outgrow that interest as you matured. And the same with anything. As you gain more and more of the wholeness of yourself, all of these little desires fall away. It's like, oh, wow, why go for the Twinkies when I can have the whole grocery chain, if you know what I mean. So that is we're all somewhere in this equation, all of us. And you get to the point where you're simply living, excuse me, in ongoing service and unconditional loving, regardless of the place or the situation or what's going on. You just don't have any more of that acidity, that toxic reaction. You just don't go there anymore. There's a natural sweetness that is part of the soul that just begins to soften your whole nature. It's said that the greatest power is exhibited in gentleness, that the more power a person has, the more gentle. You know, Jesus is described as being meek and mild. Doesn't mean weak and wimpy. It means that he was softened by the divine, so that he was just that. He didn't have any of the hard edges of ego at all in his nature. So some masters will choose to remain and work on earth, while others will go and set up their work, their area where they are administering whatever, a temple or an ashram or a body of work upon the astral plane, or the causal plane, or the mental, or the etheric, or the soul plane. Or even some go in and establish their administration, their work, in the nameless and formless God realms. And if you study some of the books of Ekankar, they speak about some of these masters and the temples and ashrams and golden wisdom repositories that they preside over. Now, some masters will work with the mineral kingdom, the plant kingdom, the animal kingdom, or with the devas and angels that preside in these various kingdoms. Others will work with human beings. My particular work, I work with the consciousness grids of humanity. And there's others that work with vast areas of cosmic endeavor beyond the earth. And each comes through their line of involvement based upon their inherent divine qualities and nature. We all have a nature. And it's interesting that we get to be our nature fully as we integrate and become perfected within the soul integration. And our divine qualities and nature are governed by specific rays that each of us embody that govern the personality, the soul, the mental body, the astral body, the personality vehicle. And ultimately, your major ray is the ray of your monad, or I Am Presence. And so we are colored, as it were, and qualified to divinely embody a particular area of administration and service as a co-worker, as a divine co-worker of God. And that's what we're all doing. And it's not limited to this planet. Man, with a capital M, human, has been seated throughout creation. On this earth, we have a different factor. I'm not quite sure what it is, but it makes us unique in all of the cosmos, according to Sai Baba. I think it's because we're such a hybrid of so many seed programs, so many colonizations, so many planetary species and races have gone into making Earth humanity that it's quite unique for that reason. You don't have that kind of diversity on, for example, Venus or Mars. I can't speak for too many of the other planets. I don't remember them consciously, but I do remember Venus very consciously, and I remember Mars. So, just saying, there are many, many places that we work. We're doing that work now when we're out of the body. You know, when you are driving your car and you've just passed places and you can't even remember having passed them. You can't remember the trip from point A to point B. Or you're sitting in wool gathering in a class or something and somebody says something and you jump because you were totally out of your body in another place. Or sometimes you've got that multidimensional thing down really well, and you just feel like you're really, really tall. And then somebody will bring your energies down, and you feel like you're slam dunked into the carpet. Suddenly you feel like you're a little person. Those are all examples of being out of your body, doing work on other levels while you're walking around doing whatever it is you're doing. Happens very often when you're watching TV, or you think you're reading a book, but you're actually just your basic self is occupied with a movie or the book, and you're out doing work for God. But always at night, you're doing work upon the inner planes. You're learning, and you're also serving, always. So you never are not working, never are not involved in being a server of light. I think it's a good thing. You know, it's good to realize that we're not ever, ever, ever not effectively serving our divine purpose, even if we're not conscious of it. Being conscious of it is nice, but it's not mandatory. So, the clashing of the energies of divinity with the egoic persona is what is so often depicted as the battle between good and evil. Baba says that the whole planet is going through the equivalent of what is called the Battle of Kurukshetra in the Bhagavad Gita. The Battle of Kurukshetra was between the Pandavas, which were five, with Krishna as their cheerleader, or what would you call it? The charioteer of Arjuna, one of the Pandavas. And then you had 100 Kauravas, who were like the demonic evildoers, for want of a better word. But that the battle is in the field of the mind. It's in between ideologies and beliefs and religions. And all of that, it has nothing to do with certain people being totally evil and certain people being totally good. No, we're all a mixed bag. We all have a little good and a little evil and everything going in between. But let me define what evil is so that you catch my drift. The battle is really between the egoic momentums of the personal self and the soulific energies of the divine coming down and trying to occupy the mind-body vehicle. And it's not that the ego mind is necessarily evil. It was a very necessary stage in our development. In esoteric understanding, evil refers to that which may have served a very good purpose at one time, but now is retrogressive and needs to be overcome and transcended. For example, evil is live or live spelled backwards. E-V-I-L is L-I-V-E. Devil, D-E-V-I-L, is lived, L-I-V-E-D, spelled backwards. So evil and the devil refer to retrogressive tendencies in our nature that go counter to ongoing life, which is expansion, and hence freedom. Freedom from egoic limitations, which always are like a damper on expansiveness. So evil and the devil always refer to anti-life, like anti-Christ. Antichrist also refers to any resistance to pure unconditional loving. Christ is the term that refers to the purest, most divine, unconditional love. And every soul is that in untried potential. So Christ is the soul quality inherent in everyone, though not necessarily integrated and expressed in most of us at this point. But we're somewhere in that process, and that's a good thing. So Earth is the trying, training, testing, and proving ground where divine potential is brought forward and wedded with our human personality. And that's the whole gig down here. That's everything. So why all these religions? Because soul needs to have a variety of perspectives in life. It needs to round out its personality. You might have one lifetime as a charismatic saint, followed by a lifetime as a Soviet, well, let's not be politically incorrect here, followed by being a totalitarian communist dictator. Let's put it that way. And it's because the soul is balancing out tendencies so that we're not just a Johnny One Note. We have a rounded experience of all kinds of personalities and belief systems and viewpoints in which we have navigated the terrain of an earth life. And this is very, very important. That's how we become bodhisattvas of divine compassion, is that we've all been there, done that, had the experience, and we can understand if that's your particular path. Not everyone is here as a bodhisattva, but those of you who are know what I'm talking about. But whether you're here as a bodhisattva or whatever, you're still needing to learn the lesson of unconditional, unbiased, unprejudicial divine love. That is the lesson, the major lesson for this planet and this solar system. Well, the lesson of this planet, which is under the third ray of active intelligence, is to actively use our intelligence to move forward in goodwill and sharing and fairness and justice amongst all of our fellow planet mates, all of our fellow souls. We need to learn to live in goodwill, in harmony, in fellowship, and cooperative endeavor, and share the resources of the planet. But the overall lesson of the solar system and this universe is love, wisdom, represented respectively by the Buddha and the Christ. We just had the Vaisak full moon just a couple days ago, and that brought in a tremendous surcharge of blessings and light from the Buddha for enlightenment for humanity, and the Christ for compassion and divine love. And those two great brothers always come together at the time of the Vaisak full moon to bless humanity with those very, very needed energies. And all of us join in that process in our soul bodies. So it's a big collective gathering that takes place at the full moon of the Buddha, which usually falls at sometime in May. So what we feed, feel, and nurture, we increase in our life. And the physical, egoic life, the personality life, is all about taking in what we increase our physical body by nutritional intake. The emotional body increases with emotional expression. The mental body increases with study and concentration, learning things. But only when you get to the soul does the dynamic shift and you begin to give out. So the soul increases through giving, sharing, and selfless service. And the spirit itself, the monad, increases to the degree that we can fully express the purity of the divine, the it of itself, which is not qualified. It is not conditioned, even in serving. It's that presence that simply is. And at that state, it's pure beingness or pure being, or as I sometimes call it, pure being, awareness, bliss, or Satchitananda. And that's where the manyness that we see portrayed in the many forms in this world simply dissolve into the unified presence as the one love that is. So all the levels take until you begin to move into the soul, and the soul lives by giving and forgiving, whereas the ego by getting and forgetting. So it's very important that whatever your spiritual path is, and as long as it's a path of love that does not seek to harm or inhibit or coerce or limit another person's freedom, it is a good path. So as long as it's a path of love, that is the way. The way is love. However, spiritual information must always be accompanied by application in daily life. Otherwise, nothing is retained. Whatever you learn has to be applied within a certain period of time, otherwise it just kind of dissipates from your mind. So theories and concepts accepted intellectually will not be our personal and permanent acquisition. Only when we have incorporated on a personal level to where whatever it is we've learned has become our natural modus operandi, only then can we say that we have it. For our learning to ignite our heart and become real to us, we must have experienced this truth for ourselves. Whatever it is, it has to have come through us to become one with us. And only with experience derived from application will that sense of solid certainty anchor in our awareness. You're going to have doubts as long as you're taking your information secondhand. You're always going to have confusion when you're attached to a particular point of view and something else comes in that challenges that. But both confusion and doubt vanish with the certainty derived from direct experience. When you know what you know from that direct experience, that's where you stand unwavering. That people say, believe, do whatever they want, but you know that you know, and you stand in the light of your own being. And that's a great place to be seated in. Of course, you're always going to be expanding. But you expand from a certainty and an embracing, not from leaving or forsaking whatever it is that filled your heart at one point. You just keep expanding, and there's more and more inclusiveness in your life. That's why Sai Baba says once you have seen him and heard him, you don't have to forsake your given religion and your chosen form of for worship, because he is the embodiment of all names and all forms. And whoever you worship, you come nearer and nearer to him in the worship that you're accustomed to doing, whether you're a Christian or a Buddhist or an atheist or whatever. It doesn't matter. So the cultivating of greater insightfulness and wisdom also requires periods of stillness. Sometimes people don't understand that when nothing's going on, that is part of the integration process. You have to have periods where nothing's going on. Even have lifetimes where nothing's going on. After, for example, a very rigorous lifetime, might be followed by one or two lifetimes in which you kind of get to kick back and wool gather. You know, you don't have to do much in that incarnation. So when you have an incarnation of that like that, it's not a time to say, oh, well, I'm failing my mission. No. Enjoy the cycle of rest. It will be followed by another cycle of endeavor and creativity, because everything in the cosmos operates in these natural cycles. And we do also in our natural biorhythms as human beings. So patience is very, very important. Patience with yourself. And just getting your mindset that whatever is going on in your life is the way it's meant to be, and it's a good thing, and it's a blessing. So look for the blessing, look for the pony under the pile, and be happy. Be happy. And enjoy what you have, because you have what you have, because you have attracted that to you for a very good reason. So if it's lemons, make lemonade. So there are periods where you're very still and you use that quiet time for reflection and contemplation. And every day needs to have some point in which you're still and you're just hanging out with the presence. Daily meditation coupled with mindfulness as you stay aware and go about your daily activities. And view your situations and things that come up in each day. You stay mindful. You don't get sucked into the drama. You view it from the balcony. And then you use your situations and challenges for on-job training, for your mastery. On-job training. If you don't have any challenges, how are you going to know where you have your strengths and your weaknesses? So you learn to direct your mind to stay present and focused and not allow it to wander willy-nilly. You learn to direct your emotions into positive channels of expression. So you don't keep creating unnecessary drama for yourself and others. You discipline your physical body so that it serves your higher purpose as a soul. Consider the body like your vehicle of transportation so that your soul can get to where it needs to be on the physical plane. But, like a car, it needs to be maintained in good, serviceable condition. That's your responsibility. So, in terms of spiritual paths and how we approach them, I'm just amazed about the path my dear friend, Drunvalo Melchizedek, had in his spiritual awakening. I deeply respect Drunvalo for his profound wisdom and his really pure, unconditional, loving heart. But he had a most unusual way that his spiritual path was revealed to him. What happened was that two angels began appearing to him on a regular basis. One he describes as green and the other magenta. And every time that he was to study with some particular teacher, the angels would give Drunvalo their exact address and whereabouts, as well as when to go to that particular teacher, and when he had received what was intended and needed, when it was time to move on. Amazing. Just imagine an angel appearing to you and giving you an address and telling you to go study with so-and-so, maybe God knows where they could be, because these masters and teachers were all over. And with Jun Falo, sometimes the encounter was very brief. Maybe it was just to meet them and have dinner, maybe spend the night, maybe a few hours, or maybe a day or two. And the angels would say, that's enough, time to leave. And sometimes that was not what Jun Falo wanted to do. He would have liked to have remained longer, but the angels were always very firm. And then he would be given the name of an address of another teacher that he was to go and study with. So, like that, he was sent to 70 different teachers, some for a day, some for a few months, and some for years. Toth was his main teacher, or one of his main teachers, who was also Hermes, who created the planetary grids, and Jun Falo had been working with him from Atlantean times, and he has a name I can't even remember, much less pronounce. But anyway, it's the same guy, it's Toth. And later Hermes, who created the planetary grid. And that's always been such a major part of Jun Falo Melchizedek's work, along, of course, with sacred geometry. And I think most of you are familiar with his flower of life symbol that he first discovered in one of the temples in Egypt. So there's many, many unusual and interesting ways that we're guided in our path and where we have to study. You may be in a religion for a little while and then out. I know when I was in training for my work with the Ashtar Command back in the early 60s, that we were put on a course of study where we had to study every single religion, every culture, everything from Lemuria and Atlantis, all through the different root races. We had to read everything about mind, body, emotions, spirit, psycho-cybernetics, mind discipline, mindfulness, everything we had to study. And it was a 3-year course of study that they put us on, the Ashtar Command, with specific books for each level that we had to study. We had such a thorough education about humanity and this planet and human consciousness. And I was being trained, there were 10 of us, and I was being trained to be one of the teachers for the Ashtar Command. And wow, what an education we got in that 3-year period of time. It was amazing. Then at the end of 3 years, my teacher passed away in my arms. She was finished. She was given a 10-year mission to train 10 teachers. And the very day that that 10-year period came to a halt, she left her body and broke my heart. You know, I was just devastated. But that was the way it was meant to be at that time. But I remember she would put us periodically on a rest where we couldn't read any books, which was torture for me because I loved to read. And sometimes it was, you know, for a few weeks and sometimes for a month or longer that we weren't allowed to read, and we had to absorb and integrate whatever it was that we had studied. And it was an amazing time. But it gave me such a good foundation for the work that I have been called to do all of these many years. And then, of course, I studied in the Arcane School for 4 years, the Alice Bailey teachings that were given by the Master DK. And again, that gave me a really good esoteric background for the work that I'm doing today. But that was my path. So what's yours? What showed up in your life for you? How have you been guided? What religions have you passed through? Are you still in one? That's fine. I consider religions very much like training wheels. They keep you upright and headed in the right direction, and they keep you from taking an unnecessary tumble. But at some point, you learn how to ride the bicycle without the need for training wheels. Most enlightened beings come to a point where they're equally comfortable in a mosque, in a church, in a gurudwara, in a Hindu temple, or out in the forest, or in the middle of L.A., or New York, or Chicago, or wherever. They're simply living in God. And they know that their whole body, their every part of them, is the holy habitation of the Most High. Their whole life has become a holy habitation. And that is the goal of the soul, and why we are going through all of these religions and belief systems and points of view and beyond. Because beyond, we embrace them all. We see their inherent value. They're each meant for a soul at a certain stage of consciousness and understanding. They're all good. They all have some truth. None of them have all the truth. But nothing down here in this world of illusion is 100%. Only God. And that is what you are forever and always. Divine. So let's go out chanting on IQ. Deep breath. On IQ. On IQ. May all the beings in all the worlds have peace. May all awaken to the divine love that they truly are. May all have joy, happiness, and fulfillment. Namaste.